two of the most powerful phrases that you can say to another person are also the two phrases that will leave you the most vulnerable. I love you, and I'm sorry. I discovered this some years ago when I was a local superior of a small Jesuit community. First time I'd been a superior of a community. We were only four, but the work we were doing was pretty intense. Two of us were working with Jesuit novices at the novitiate, so that's the first 2 years after a man enters the Jesuits. That novitiate period is intense because for those 2 years, those men are confirming their decision. Is this what I really want to do? Do I really want to be a priest? Do I really want to be religious? And for its part, the Jesuits are deciding, does this really seem like an authentic vocation? Is he going to fit in our group? Is this going to work? And so during this time, these 2 years, some men leave, as they should. And some men are asked to leave, as they should be. And at the end of the 2 years, novices cease being novices because they take lifelong vows that make them a part of our group. So that was the two of us working in the novitiate. The other two Jesuits had, their work was unusual. They directed a small film production company that was trying to influence in a Catholic way what was going on in Hollywood. So they're producing films and videos and documentaries and all sorts of things. And their work was intense because, well, it's Hollywood and everything in Hollywood is intense. So as a new inexperienced superior, I managed inadvertently to really upset two of the guys. And for days, we walked around as if there were invisible walls between us that prevented real contact and real communication. And we had a community meeting coming up. We had regular community meetings every couple of weeks, and we had one coming up. And I knew I would have to deal with this situation. But I also knew that it would be easier if everyone in the community was angry with me. So in that week, I found an opportunity to really make the third guy angry with me. It's kind of, I don't know, I feel kind of bad about that. But so as we gathered in the living room for our meeting, our regular get-together, everyone was angry with me. And I began the meeting by acknowledging that everyone was angry with me, and I apologized. I said, I'm sorry. I made mistakes that have annoyed you, upset you, and I really apologize. And when I did, my apology began like an avalanche of apologies and admissions of mistakes and understanding and support. The walls came tumbling down, and we had one of our best meetings. I learned that day that my role in the community as superior was to say two things as frequently as I possibly could. I'm sorry, and thank you. In a community of men, thank you kind of substitutes for I love you, because, well, we're guys. And we reserve I love you for God and deathbed conversations. So I apologize and thank you. Whenever I said I'm sorry, it allowed the other person to drop his defenses and safely tell me what was really happening in his life. And I learned that it was important to say I'm sorry even when I had nothing to do with what was hurting or injuring him. Because the world is not fair or kind, and often there was no one else to acknowledge the bruises and hurts that he carried. Forgiveness is wonderful. Forgiveness is a grace, a blessing, but it often has to begin with an apology. "I'm sorry" opens the door for the graces to enter in. And "thank you" was a way of saying, "I see all the good you do, and I'm really glad you're around." A kind of a low level, "I love you." Because men are fragile. In the gospel today that we just heard, Jesus urges us all, stop judging, you will not be judged. Stop condemning, so you're not condemned. My experience is that most judgment and condemnation are really defenses. Someone or something has injured me, compromised me, in some way made me feel threatened. So I throw up defenses that are available to me. Often that just means throwing out a judgment or condemning someone. He's a controlling perfectionist. She's a prima donna. The homeless are lazy. Immigrants are criminals. Judgment and condemnation assert a kind of strength, and it distances me from the other person, from the other sometimes fearful reality. But they really come from my being afraid. A good many years ago, I was working at Santa Clara University, and occasionally Jesuits in that community would get a general email message from the director of campus ministry to the effect that there's a wedding scheduled in the university chapel, we called it the Mission Church, and the couple does not have a priest to witness their marriage. Can anyone help them out? Sounds pretty innocuous, right? I learned it's always risky. There are reasons why someone doesn't know a single Jesuit after being in a Jesuit university for 4 years. The first time I volunteered, as we were just about to process into the church, all four of the groomsmen were intoxicated. Luckily, the groom was not, or else the wedding would have been invalid. So I thought, well, you know, bad luck the first time. The second time, I would have conversations with the couple for maybe 2 months before the wedding, you know. So I knew that the bride was estranged from her father, and she said, he won't be coming. I said, oh, that's sad, you know. The night of the rehearsal, she tells me, my father's coming after all. Oh, I said, oh, great, I'm so glad he's coming. And he usually carries a gun. I thought, not so good. So I'm kind of thinking, how can I duck, you know? Foolishly, I accepted a third wedding from the director of campus ministry. A really nice couple. I liked them a lot. But they didn't go to church, or not much, maybe Christmas. So I said to them, why get married in the church? And ultimately, it came down to, well, it's the Mission Church and it's gorgeous, right? And I said, well, tell me your experience of church and God. I said, what do you think about it all? And they said, well, church is good. You know, church is there to make people behave so God won't condemn them. I almost screamed. But I'm guessing that's really a lot of people's answer, right? A lot of people think that. In today's gospel, Jesus tells us very forcefully, don't judge, don't condemn, forgive. It says a lot about how we should treat each other, how we hope to treat each other. But it also says a lot about God and who God is. There is nowhere Jesus asks us to go that he has not already gone before us. Nowhere. Could he have asked us to carry our own cross if he had not already done so himself? No, never. So when he tells us to forgive, don't judge, don't condemn, it means that he's asking of us something that is already true of God. God forgives. God does not condemn. God does not judge. Back to the couple. So instead of screaming, I said, "How would you like to go to a place where you are never condemned, where no one judges you, where someone will acknowledge how the world or life has bruised or injured you, and where you are told you are loved?" He said, "That sounds like a nice place. That sounds like a nice place." I said, "Try coming to church." So that gave me this idea. I have a new idea for our greeters. How would it be if each greeter would say to each person, as she or he enters the door of the church, "Here you will not be condemned by anyone, much less by God. Here you will not be judged, not by anyone in this church, nor by God. And I'm sorry for how life has been hard on you, and I understand the hurt. And I love you. God loves you." I can see the greeters getting nervous about that last one. Maybe "thank you for coming to church" would be enough. The gospel says, gifts will be given, a good measure, packed together, shaken down and overflowing, will be poured into your lap.